Okay, I'm Carol Storage, and this is a session on deafness, the hidden handicap. And I thought I'd start out by telling you how I'm involved with deafness, and then I'll introduce Joe. I'm a teacher of hearing impaired kids at the junior high level, and I've worked with hearing impaired kids from 6 years, well, even really through high school on different, you know, occasions and that sort of thing. So that's my background, and that's where I'll kind of come from as a teacher of hearing impaired kids. Joe?
My name is Joe Kling. I live and work in the Tacoma area of Washington, and I do freelance interpreting, which means that I work through an agency. Deaf clients will call the agency, or other organizations will call the agency, looking for interpreters to facilitate the communication between a deaf client and perhaps a lawyer or police or counselor or classroom situation. They will contact interpreters through that listing. I also am the director of a deaf ministry at our church. It's called the Christian Center of Deaf Fellowship at People's Church in Tacoma, where I organize, write, try to lead, guide, and study along with deaf children, young adults, and adults in a variety of different programs. This year recently we have started a missionary outreach in the form of a newsletter to those missionaries working among the deaf all over the world. We've more or less expanded our outreach in that area. So I will be speaking probably from those three different perspectives.
Which is good, we kind of come from different places. We talked about this, kind of decided we'd like to do it in sort of a forum way instead of maybe just us talking, although I might say a few things first. But find out from you maybe why you came or what your interests might be or questions that you might have. One of my favorite quotes to start with is something that Helen Keller said. She said, "Blindness separated me from things, and deafness separates me from people." Yeah, and some of you have probably heard that, but to me that's a real kind of the crux of deafness. Sort of explains that deafness is not just the inability to hear, but it's a communication handicap. And I don't know if I want to go into that now, but maybe we can later, what that means as a teacher. But I guess for me today, it's more important that I find out where your interests are. I can talk about hearing impaired kids, and if that's not what your interest is, maybe that's not what you're here to hear about. So, Joe, I don't know if you want to give any other opening statements, or maybe we can just go ahead and open it up.
I think maybe a clarification on terms would help us understand what we're talking about when we talk about being deaf or hearing impaired or hard of hearing. The general category of a hearing loss is being hearing impaired, such as a person who has a visual impairment and go anywhere from wearing glasses to correct their vision all the way to the other end of the extreme of being profoundly or extremely blind, or legally blind, I should say. The same is true with the hearing impairment range. A hard of hearing person can have a very low hearing loss, which we would call them hard of hearing, and as the degree increases to the point where they cannot hear extremely loud sounds, that they would be moving towards the end of the spectrum called deafness. So we can't use the word deaf as the general category term. We need to use the word hearing impaired and then start dividing that in between hard of hearing and the deaf range. It's far more technical than that, but we tend to use the word deaf as the general term. I think maybe that would help in our explanation.
Okay, do any of you have questions or comments? We can just keep talking if you like, but if you came with some specific something in mind, I guess I would kind of like to look at that maybe first.
Well, I came because my mother-in-law is severely hearing impaired. She wears two hearing aids, and even at that, it's a bring this training, and it has to be at least this close, and just see them speak very loudly, distance they get to be heard. And well, my husband is beginning to have some hearing impairment. He has had him this year tested, and they said he's not ready for hearing aid yet, but so often he has to ask to repeat it, or he repeats something that he hears, which is very totally different from what I've said or what from other people. And I know it's not just me, because then it's up here too, he misses out on a few things like that. And so I know it's some of the problems associated with it, and I just don't know any special ways. I know the one living with someone or relating with someone that's hearing impaired does takes patience, and
it can be
a lack.
Yeah, it's something that probably will touch all of us in some way or another, either ourselves or somebody in our family. So it's something that's very current. It becomes a very isolating thing for the kids that I work with. It's very isolating from maybe possibly the time they're born, if they were born that way, with parents maybe not signing and not knowing what's going on around at the dinner table, not being informed like the other children in the family are. But it can also be, like you say, an older age when you begin to lose your hearing that you've had all the time. I'm sure you're aware of a lot of the things that you can do, just as far as facing the person when you talk, talking maybe a little louder, but certainly not shouting and that sort of thing. Making sure you have their attention, touching
attention
them.
First, yeah.
Yep.
What else, Joe? It's real hard. I hate to group anybody into a category, because I think hearing loss is very so much, and you may be speaking into the wrong ear. Sometimes people will have a hearing loss in one ear, and they'll say, this is my good ear, and this is my bad ear. So perhaps knowing that, I've known a few interpreters who have had one ear that has had more hearing than the other, and they will position themselves to the appropriate side of the speaker so that they have that good input from the speaker, and they can translate and interpret it to the deaf clients in the room.
If a person is wearing one hearing aid, do you speak towards the hearing aid or towards the other ear? I mean, I assume, well, I don't know what I assume as far as which ear they are.
I wouldn't do anything out of the ordinary. I believe that the people who fit the person with the hearing aid is trying to make their hearing as much of a stereo input as they can, where they would both be brought up to as much of a comparable level as possible. I wouldn't lean to one side of the speaker.
That's something else that's really important, is going to a qualified hearing aid person, and I'm sure you're well aware of that. But there are hearing aids. You know, all hearing aids are not the same. They're modified to the hearing loss and can correct what that loss is. And so that if the loss is in the higher ranges, then the hearing aid is, if you get that particular type, will pick up those higher ranges and not the lower ranges. If a person has close to normal hearing in the lower ranges and you get a hearing aid that picks it up all the way across, well, what happens is they end up in the drawer turned off, because they hear the scraping of chairs, and all those low sounds are just really, really loud. And so it's really important, if a person is going to wear a hearing aid, which they should, if they've got a hearing loss that can be corrected by that, to have it properly fitted so that it does help and doesn't hinder rather than help.
One of the things that Carol and I was talking about before the session started was our understanding of what a deaf person can or cannot hear. We think, I keep jumping back and forth between the deaf and the blind here. I wonder whether you're in the right workshop or not. But we think that a blind person cannot see anything. And although I haven't been blind myself, I've talked with them before, and sometimes, depending on their degree of blindness, they can see shadows or lights and darks, and parallel thoughts and ideas are true with a person who might be considered deaf. They do hear very loud sounds. And I was sharing with Carol, a friend of ours, whose mother was around 95 years old. She was in a nursing home, but everybody knew that she was deaf, and she had been since early childhood. They put a woman in her room who was constantly screaming and yelling all day long from morning until night, and they thought that was an appropriate roommate because Stacia was deaf. But when I went in to talk with her, and we used sign language to speak, she asked me if I would please ask someone if they could take the lady down to the patio or some other place, because it was extremely annoying and bothering her, and this was her daily routine. And so the staff had made the assumption, because Stacia was deaf, that she couldn't hear this woman screaming. And it was one of those things that I guess we didn't stop to think about, they didn't stop to think about, and she was already in a very close situation. The deaf woman could not speak with the nurses. Her form of communication was only with her family or some visitor that would come in and use sign language, or writing very brief notes. And maybe you would like to address the language level of deaf people and ability to communicate through notes.
It's a real key. As a teacher, we find that all of us learn to talk, to put words in sentences. I'm not talking about talking as far as speech, but to communicate language by hearing. So by the time a child gets to school, he's got a very good, or she has, command of language. In other words, they can tell what they want, and they can explain things, and they understand concepts and so forth. Hearing impaired kids do not have that, unless they were very fortunate to be in a family that signed to them very early on, but it doesn't happen very often. So what we find is hearing impaired kids that have very stunted language growth, because this has been blocked off. As a child, as a baby, they might get an occasional word, water and bedtime and that sort of thing, but they've never heard how language all fits together in order to communicate. And we work with parents, again and again and again, about trying to talk to your child in complete sentences. But unless they can talk in complete sentences in sign language, meaning the parent, they're not going to do it. So they think water, is enough, and that means, please give me a glass of water, or I want a drink. And they accept that, mainly because the parents can't model for them. A child learns by modeling. So what happens is we get hearing impaired kids, even at the junior high level, who have a great deal of difficulty both communicating through signing, and through written language. Their language just doesn't flow, does not fit together. It's not because they're not just as bright as any other child in the school, because they are, but they haven't had the exposure to language that everybody else has by listening. So again, everybody thinks, well, the deaf person can pull out their pad of paper and write whatever it is. Well, some can, and some do amazingly well with language, considering what they're up against. But there are a lot of people who can't. So not only are they lacking the ability to speak and communicate, oftentimes they lack the ability to write and communicate. It's an extremely isolating handicap.
And what do you do as a teacher?
Well, with really young kids, we do a lot of modeling, so that we would do the same thing that a normal, small child would go through. When I taught six-year-olds, if they wanted a drink of water, they would sign water to me, and I would say, may I have a drink of water? Can I have a drink of water, please? And they would know to model that back to me. A lot of times I just sort of play dumb, even with junior high kids. They'll give me three words which communicated to me an idea. I knew what they were trying to tell me. I can't even think of an example, but mother's store. And so I'll say, well, tell me more. And I try and get them, I try and bring the language out of them, and as if I don't understand, which I very well did. But then they begin to what we call expand their language. I do a lot of journal writing, a lot of editing, that kind of process with language. I teach language in everything I do. If I'm teaching history, I teach language. If I'm teaching geography, I teach language. So everything.
You can't teach the concept if you don't have the language.
That's right. That's right.
My wife is here. Does it deal as profound as as much as degrees of hearing impairment, the lower end of the range in terms of minimal to moderate, especially in terms of the worship environment. We have at least four on any given Sunday who have varying degrees of hearing impairment utilizing hearing aids. And one of the recurring comments that I hear from these folks, as well as I'm sure parishes have the same problem, is with those hearing aids, for the most part, it helps them to participate in the worship life, but it also is very aggravating when you have small kids that are screeching, you have somebody dropping a hymnal, you get feedback over a microphone, all of those sort of things, to the point that they really don't know if they want to participate or not with all of that extraneous stuff going on.
Plus they have to work extra hard to get what's going on.
How do you improve that situation?
Yeah, I don't have an easy answer to that. Some churches are putting in systems. We use these in the school called FM systems or Phonic Ear, Telex, or those are brand names. But what it is the teacher wears a mic, and the child has a little kind of a box here, and it feeds right into the hearing aids.
It's actually a wireless system.
Right. And what it does is it picks up just the voice of the speaker. Okay, they can put it on so it picks up everything, but you can get just the voice of the speaker. But that becomes very expensive for congregations. And, you know, it is one solution, but I don't know. I know that that problem exists, and it is difficult.
I'd like to back up just a little bit to that a little bit more. I think that this might clarify the point in just simply passing off our communication skills with a deaf person who uses American Sign Language by simply writing on a piece of paper and then looking at what they've written back to you and labeling them as being unintelligent because their command of English is so low. You might think while I'm drawing up here and explaining this chart here, how you would feel if you went to a foreign country in which you had not studied their language before. Now, if you studied German and you went to Germany, this would not apply. Or if you knew Spanish and you went to a Spanish-speaking country, this would probably not apply if you were fluent in it. However, Carol and I consider ourselves bilingual, right? Because we know English and with a certain level of command of English and still know American Sign Language. This is starting to be accepted more as a legitimate language. Linguistic studies have been done on this, and they've compared it closely to the structure of Chinese or Navajo. And a deaf person who is learning and using American Sign Language, this becomes their main language. English becomes their secondary language. A hearing person, of course, is using English, and then if you wanted to learn sign language, this would be pulling, you know, up into a secondary language to you. Therefore, what we're seeing is a hearing person graduating out of high school with a 12th grade command of English, the English grammar and language.
But they wouldn't. But they wouldn't.
Well, this is what they're saying. Okay. This is what they're graduating at 12th grade, a higher. Are you saying because their educational system is
No, I'm just saying that very few deaf kids would graduate.
No, I'm saying this is a hearing person.
Oh, a hearing person. Oh. Okay. Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, you can fill in that. I can accept that.
Okay. The hearing person is going to know probably, unless they're in a school with hearing impaired people,
zilch over here in American Sign Language. All right, so this gives kind of a baseline. Now, the deaf person is probably going to graduate at a 12th grade graduation ceremony or whatever with a command of English at about what grade level?
Third, fourth.
Okay, let's just say fourth.
That's their, more reading level even than English level.
Their ability to communicate and reading and writing skills in English is about a fourth grade. However, if you tested them in their own language, they would be graduating probably out of high school with a 12th grade knowledge of American Sign Language. Now, what we're saying is, when we try to communicate with the deaf person, they're functioning at a fourth grade level, and we say their English is so bad, and therefore they must be
not very smart.
Or children, like children. However, they have that's their secondary language. And now we're getting so many classes in English as a second language, and we're starting to understand more that English is a second language to so many people. And this is where a lot of the deaf people are falling. Very highly intelligent. When you see deaf adults communicating, PhDs and master's degree, because they have done most of their learning and communicating through interpreters or by means of their own language where they understood. You know, if I went to a church over in, like I say, Germany or someplace, I wouldn't benefit as much like maybe some of the people in your church because there was a language barrier. And this is what's happening with deaf. I thought maybe this would help. Yeah. I don't know how.
Would you clarify that on the tape? Yeah. What you need to understand, though, is American Sign Language is not structured like English, and that's what
right.
Joe is trying to say. In the schools, we teach English, and we teach what we call signing exact English, because we believe that the more we can get them to be able to read and write English, the better they're going to be able to function in a hearing world. But as adults, they will use their American Sign Language, most of them, and there is a difference.
The thought just came to my mind, if the hearing impaired person is talking at a 12th grade American Sign Language level, if the hearing person heard them talking in simplified ASL language, would that seem to us as a 12th grade level of communication?
Okay, one word that you said there is talking, and we're saying signing,
communicating.
They would not.
It wouldn't be the set structure or the structure that the hearing person is
right.
familiar with at a 12th grade level.
Right. I had an interesting thing. At breakfast here a couple mornings ago, after we did our signing, Monday morning, and because I am the teacher, I'm more in this mode. I do not know American Sign Language very well. Okay. So when I did my song, it was more in English, and I signed it, and I could map the words fairly easily, and so forth. When Joe and Teresa, because they're trained as interpreters in American Sign Language, and the woman across the breakfast table to me was very observant, I thought. She said to me, mentioning Joe and Teresa, said it was as if they were speaking another language when they mapped the words. Is that true? And I said, well, yeah, exactly. That is what happened.
Particularly the last one. I was sitting there saying,
Joe.
I noticed the difference.
You aren't even talking what the words are.
Well, there were several factors in that. I thought they were singing a different song. They were study, for one thing.
But, she studied a different tune, and that completely
it threw me off. But the thing that is, if you're thinking English, somewhere between here and here, my head and my hands, it is translated into a different language, and it tends to come out in a whole different sentence structure. Therefore, I don't know how anyone can speak Spanish and, let's say, sign English. This is the only language that you can actually, there is a possibility of speaking and signing two different languages, you know, at the same time, but you really can't when you move over to American Sign Language because it's the structure is set up different. The verbs and the tenses are changed around. So if I did not lip read or use my lips, it's because I'm not on that plane of genius where I can still be speaking English and
doing something else with your hands.
So translating it into American Sign Language.
So it gets back to what I'm saying then in terms of the communication that go on between the hearing impaired and the hearing person, mm-hmm. we really would have a difficult time communicating.
This is why they use a lot of interpreters. Mm-hmm. Because we take words like, I was teasing Carol at lunch, Jody, the man who was announcing, said, now if you will please bear with me, and I said, Carol, and I signed the word bear, because we have so many idiomatic expressions in our English language that doesn't make any sense to someone from another country or using another language. It doesn't have to be a deaf person, but I have brought several books, and one of the ones that I chose out of my library of deaf awareness at home was one on idioms. That would cost an arm and a leg. Well, what does an arm and a leg cost? We use these, you know, are you going to jump on the bandwagon or not? You know, and we think there's a parade going through town.
But this is all true also of foreigners.
Yeah. Yes, very much so.
Yeah. We kept a Swedish friend jumping all through Christmas when she visited us. The kids kept teasing her by using all these slang phrases. Mm-hmm. And she was a real, real good sport. So they were, you know, she knew what was going on. But they called it giving Monica the business. They were giving her the business.
Yeah. And in schools, we do
try. That's the same situation.
Yes.
We do try and teach that, but that changes all the time. And when you go through a reading book, I've taught two reading classes, and these are our higher level kids, I would read a page and I would find those all the time, over and over again, and I would use that as vocabulary. But hearing kids, they would know it because they've heard it all the time. Deaf kids, and that's why they don't generally get beyond fourth grade reading level, because that's so much of that, because they don't take it in all day, you know, what, 12 hours a day, or however long they're up, they don't get it, so they're not exposed to it.
The other thought that I think might be worth considering here right now, or just contemplating, is the challenge that a deaf person would have, and I'm using the word deaf as related to a deaf person who is using American Sign Language, would have in the church, and trying to learn, you know, from God's Word, what Bible is he going to use? Now, we get real theological about which translation is accurate, but with them it's a matter of language and understanding what words are in whatever Bible they have. I've had the young people that I work with all the time are asking me, you know, what does this mean, what does that mean, and when I'm interpreting, I interpret the concept across to them, and they're basically getting the correct meaning. But when they sit down by themselves alone and they're trying to read the Bible, mm-hmm. perhaps your level of awareness will be brought up a little bit more now when you go back to Scripture and you start seeing some of these words in the Bible. Or if some person, a minister or someone's going to be talking about justification and righteousness, even grace and glory, these words are not commonly spoken of, and the parents that I deal with in the home, some of them don't even go to church. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a hearing impaired child who has low communication with their parents, and then in terms of Christianity, they're not speaking, they don't have any reinforcement at home because the parents aren't speaking their language spiritually either.
So how do you communicate that?
How do I communicate? I pray a lot.
That's true.
And I find the children are witnessing to their parents quite a bit.
But what you're saying, though, is that again, it relies on an interpreter to mm-hmm. interpret for mm-hmm. them those meanings.
Right. Yes.
See, and we tend to paraphrase, which is something that we need to do even when we interpret here. We might change that word and think of a synonym. But what happens, as she was saying, when they go back to the Bible to read it for themselves, we've conceptually maybe shown them that through sign language, but when they read the word, then it has no meaning because they can't, well, unless maybe you finger spell it to them first or something. But that word in the Bible, they can't connect to that concept that we showed them through sign language, so that makes it more difficult.
We have used a translation that was done originally for Eskimos that was a limited vocabulary of 800 words for just the New Testament, and within a month or two, they will finally have printed a copy of the Old Testament also. And that's been very profitable. I guess it's taken quite a few years to compile it, and there's always, I've read several versions of the Bible, and I find this to be quite beneficial. I've seen them grow quite a bit with this, where somebody could quote the King James, but, you know, not understand what it meant. But we spend a lot of time in word study in our Bible studies, just focusing on one or two words, and then they're a little bit more, you know, familiar. But that adds up week after week. We get more of a command of it, the English language.
What type of communication takes place when you have a hearing impaired person coming from another country who's coming up? American Sign Language is obviously American.
That's right.
English. Are there universal languages?
I'm glad you brought that up.
Me too.
That was on my notes here. A lot of people think it is universal, and it is not at all. There are some words, because sign language is somewhat conceptual. Things like baby. I just spent the year in Australia teaching hearing impaired kids. So I went through their sign language system, and there's some words, baby and so forth, that was the same sign. But mother, father, brother, sister, the rest of those are not.
It's so supposed to be English, isn't it?
It is English,
yeah,
but it's not.
An accent.
That's right. But
even
they don't.
Their sign language is different.
It is different. Even their alphabet, their finger spelling. Same with England. So, you know, it'd be great if we had a universal, but we don't. And so that adds another. Not only is it not their first language or their second, you know, it could be their third. And we've got kids
maybe,
like that.
Maybe this is the way to go for international language.
Well, the sign language group in the other corner tried to develop something called Gestunos.
No, I'm not familiar with it.
That had about as much success as the sign language. People just could not agree on, you know, what they would decide as would be the universal language.
I think that's what happens, is nobody wants to give up what they've already got. Unless you think my way, then you're wrong. So I guess we'll just do our own thing.
We're still dealing in the Tower of Babel era in terms of not being able to communicate.
Like trying to get to use the new version of the Lord's Prayer in our congregation.
How long does it take to learn the language?
To be, in your case, for instance, to be an interpreter, how long did it take you to study?
I'm still in the process of learning. I've been in interpreting situations on a real regular basis at my church with a very hot preacher, and he speaks quite fast. I think that's been a real challenge for me. It's forced me to grow quite rapidly over a five-year period of time. But I think it's always going to depend individually on how much you invest in the language. It would be like learning any language, but part of that is blending in with a culture, blending in with the people. You need to know more than just their language. You need to know more of their idioms and how they speak as a social group as opposed to how they would speak in a discussion group. I find that quite different. They will clean up their language and clarify it, bringing it more over to English when they're around hearing people than when they're just conversing with themselves. I can't pick up on a lot of their conversation when I just look at them because they slip right into a strict ASL and that loses me.
That's what I was thinking. I was kind of comparing it to shorthand. I feel it takes a good 2 years of hard work to get to the point where you would dare go out and say yes. I guess maybe that's more of the thing I was asking.
Yes.
What is the education that you have, formal education for? Or where, I mean, is that what, you know,
there are training programs. My degree is a master's degree in teaching the deaf, and I had my regular degree in teaching prior to, and then it was a 12-month program. But again, my signing skills are at a very different level than an interpreter's skills, because I sign all day long, but I sign what I say. I sign in English. You know, I still need to read their signs back and so forth. But when you're an interpreter, it's a very difficult thing because you have someone over here talking about something you may not even know what they're talking about, saying words that there are no signs for, so you're having to finger spell. You're always behind. You obviously cannot sign what the man is saying at the time he's saying it because there's no way that you can read his mind and know what he's going to say. So what you're doing is you listen with this ear and you've got a little tape recorder going up here in your brain, and you hold that, you know, so you hear it, you hold it, and then you say something over here with your hands, and then you play this tape through your head. So you're still always listening, but what you're saying out here with your hands is completely different from what he's saying because it's this tape playing through. Yeah.
It's someplace in the middle, it turns into another language,
yeah. Yeah, and then somewhere in the middle you have to be thinking, now how am I going to say that in a different way so that they understand? And
you're a UN interpreter for the day, hearing impaired, is what it amounts to.
The thing is, with two spoken interpreters or a spoken person, you know, speaking a language and a verbal interpreter, is the first person will stop. Or, you know, if you have headphones, you're behind, but there's usually a pause. Our minister went over to Korea, and when he was preaching, he would speak a certain phrase and then wait, and the Korean interpreter would speak, and then he would speak, and then and it was a trade-off. When the sign language interpreter is expressing the language, it's... like Carol said, it's happening at the same progressive speed, but you're just one step behind and to the right.
At least one, maybe three or four.
So do you find that as you're signing to folks, if you contract to sign for a program, do you find that the hearing impaired, I don't want to say all, but the majority of the hearing impaired understand what you're saying?
I think they do now more than they did when I was beginning.
Was that your problem or their problem?
My vocabulary was far more limited in the beginning, if you could even understand with any language. You have a certain limited vocabulary, but the more you get involved in doing it, your recall is quicker. You start pulling out of your memory bank what words, what signs are appropriate for what phrases, and you understand that transcribing process a little bit more quickly. And my area of what I need to focus on more is when they sign and the hearing person wants to understand them, I need to reverse my skills and focus on their sign language and sit here and voice to the hearing person. And that's where I fall short, is because I know it when it's coming in this way from the hearing person, and I can put out, I'm real good at expressing. Maybe this is just typical human nature. We're very skilled in expressing, but when it comes to receiving, it's called the receptive skills.
It's easier to process, even with my hearing impaired kids. If I were to ever try and translate for you exactly what this child said, what they signed word for word, you just wouldn't believe it. For most of the kids, but what we do is we interpret in our heads. As we see this child sign, we start putting it together into English.
The person that's signing.
That's very true.
Besides their language.
That's right.
Be able to communicate.
And then I would put it in English. And again, lots of deaf people do have good English skills. So I don't want you to think that, you know, this is always the way. But I think you need to be aware that in a lot of cases it is the way.
Said that I've just got the impression that a lot of families, a lot of kids grow up in families that don't learn.
Don't sign.
They don't sign.
Right.
Is that true?
Very true. It was very disturbing for me when I first started.
Is that because the parents are not hearing impaired, so they're not bad to sign themselves, and they haven't.
It's too much trouble.
So they develop their own.
They don't communicate.
No, they don't. They just don't.
They don't. And that's where we run into lots and lots of difficulties. And that's where the adolescent, some of the kids that Joe works with that we've talked about, run into all kinds of problems because there's no control at home. Nobody communicates with them. They don't know, you know, appropriate behaviors and appropriate all kinds of things because no one takes the time. And I can't answer that. I got really frustrated when I first started because we offered sign language classes to the parents, and they were free, so we thought, well, that's the way you go, because maybe they can't afford. Well, no, that didn't help. So then we said, well, maybe we should just charge $5, because that way maybe they'll be more committed. You know. So we thought, well, we'll use this approach. mine didn't work either, you know. And I can't give an easy answer. I guess I have my opinions. Part of it might be a denial. Part of it just saying, well, someday the schools are going to do it. The child's going to have English, and they're going to be learn to speak, because we do work on speech. Somehow that child someday will enter our world. And the parent doesn't accept the fact that they probably will never enter that hearing world. So the parents don't try and enter their world by learning sign language.
I can recall a story of a young deaf child who was in the Tacoma School District, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this story. He grew up with all the adults around him were hearing adults, and he was a deaf boy, and the children that he played with and learned with and went to school with were all deaf. Into his room one day came a deaf adult. She came in to help with the class, and the boy was viewing her, and for some reason he thought she was somewhat different than the other adults that he had been exposed to. He approached her, somehow he found out that she was deaf, and he went into total and utter complete shock, because his mindset was, when I grow up I will be hearing, because all the hearing adults, I mean all the adults that he had known were hearing.
Oh.
But he met his first deaf adult, and it struck him that this deafness was going to be a permanent thing unless he was, you know, healed by a miracle. So I believe it's important that our youngsters, the young deaf people, have that social structure with other deaf adults. I think that's real important. I'm going to try this coming year to pull some of the deaf adults from other ministries in the area to join in with our children, so that they have more or less a grandparent who they can communicate with. I had one hearing parent approach me and say, my mom and dad do not sign to my grandchildren. They refused to learn signing. Finally, there was a disruption last summer. The girl was staying with the grandparents and finally had just enough of this communicating by means of a paper. The grandparents would not learn sign language, and she was totally frustrated with it. And came home, and the story got all mixed up. And the problem was is that she didn't have a grandparent that, like everybody else did, that she could just hear stories from, you know, talk while you're fishing. Some of the exciting things that happen between a grandchild and a grandparent. So I think that that type of family rapport also is very important for the young children, that role modeling.
How does all this relate to lip reading? You know, you hear people who do lip reading.
I think there's a misnomer about lip reading. I think I live under it too, but it is that certain people are wonderful lip readers and that they understand everything I say. Well, statistically, or whatever you want to say, only one out of every four words can even be lip read. In other words, 1/4 of what's said, because so much is formed in the back, the mouth, so many look the same, okay, on the lips and that sort of thing. I have a friend who's deaf. She lost her hearing at 14, and although I sign to her, I see her with hearing people. She understands exactly what's going on. She's a wonderful lip reader, and I think she is very good, but she's the one who keeps reminding me that it's only about 1/4, that it's a lot of guesswork. If you know what somebody's talking about, then it's much easier, and you can tell. But I think we all think, oh, they're wonderful. They really can lip read everything I say, so that's all we need to do. No, that's not at all true. But we all do lip read. I hear that a lot. Well, do they lip read? Well, you and I lip read. You know, we may not be as aware of it, but if you ever go to a lecture, or, I don't know, some place where you can't see the mouth of the speaker, you'll realize how much you do depend on lip reading. It helps a great deal. I've got really bad eyesight, and when I go swimming, anybody ever talks to me, I can never understand what they say, and it's because I can't see their lips. So we all do lip read, but it's not everything for a hearing impaired person.
It's more a supplement. Yes.
Yeah, it's a supplement. That's exactly right.
Well, this might be comparable, like, to my going over and visiting with the German relatives and trying to catch what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. That would be about where they do it.
Yeah. I went to Israel in March, and I went with a deaf group of 41 people on a bus. Most of them were deaf, And I enjoyed it because I understood their language. And we stopped at a school for the deaf in Jerusalem. Now, their whole philosophy was oral, bringing the children up oral. And this one matronly woman who was the head of the school was so proud of her, this one little girl who had come up through, I don't know how many years of oral training. And here were all these deaf people that were very adamantly opposed to the oral school of thought because they had learned and progressed so much more through sign language. They had been in college. There was a woman there with a master's degree and she was teaching from our group. And here was this woman explaining how great the oral method was, and she pulled this little girl up and she sat her on her lap and she whispered in her ear something, and the girl started speaking in Hebrew. The deaf could not read her lips because they didn't know Hebrew. And so her little show of demonstrating how great the oral training was didn't prove anything.
Fell on deaf ears, right?
Yes, it fell on deaf ears. Thank you very much.
But as you said earlier, though, even if she would have known sign language,
I think there might have been some more communication through some sign language because of what Carol was saying. There are certain body gestures that might have been, like this is a sign for milk, and wherever you find a cow, you might understand that that would be milk. So
yeah, there's a lot to body language and signing. I just love watching my kids, particularly some of our low language kids, that act out. Their ability to mime is incredible. And if people come in to observe the classroom, there are certain kids that they could get a lot from, even though they don't understand any sign language, because this child will, you know, act out what they're doing. When I taught six-year-olds, that's part of the reason I don't like working with really young kids, is I don't feel the communication is there. I don't think the rapport I felt for myself was there, because I didn't feel the understanding was at that level. But we always had news in the morning, and these kids would get up, and boy, they'd show me what they saw on TV, and I would just sit there and watch them, and it was really fascinating how they would act it out. And they would understand each other very well. And they'd draw pictures. They're all very, you know, good at sketching, and not necessarily that they're any more artistic than any hearing child, but they've learned to maybe develop that because they have to use it as part of their communication. So they draw these pictures and try and explain to me.
What kind of behavior problems do you witness?
Yeah, we do. a lot of frustration because, one, people don't understand them, both at home and maybe at school, because the communication isn't there between both of us. A lot of immature behavior, I would say, as well. They tend to go through things at a much, they'll be much older, but do things that you would expect from a much younger child. What else?
Culturally speaking, I worked on a very large Christian crusade that was held in the Tacoma area, and I was the person that was coordinating the services for the deaf. We had a whole big section that was there. Now the crusade chairman, the main person, came and said, we need to open up these seats by 7 o'clock for anyone else who was late. Now the meeting started at 7:30. I said, well, deaf people are notoriously late. And this seems to be part of their cultural. They're very laid back, and time is not relevant. They would do well up here at Holden, you know, I mean, other than bells ring, but I mean, their whole lifestyle is very, very relaxed. And, you know, if I'm 5, 10 minutes, half an hour late, it's no big deal. They drive cars. Although in Korea, I understand deaf people are not allowed to drive cars. Deaf people seem to be very acute with their other senses, and especially their visual acuity. And they probably look in the mirror while they're driving a car far more than we would. And therefore, they would pick up many more things than we do. We tend to wonder after we've gone through a single light whether it was red or green after we went through it. And I think they tend to be a little bit more alert. I'm not saying that there aren't any deaf people who get in accidents, but I think they do use their mirrors more, and they would see an emergency vehicle if there was one coming, or a policeman, probably.
Many times I find when I'm going to work, especially in the morning when I'm not quite awake and I'm driving to work, that I have the radio just blasting.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
You don't really realize it until you get into the car in the afternoon.
Yeah, exactly.
You turn the car out, and you're Mm-hmm. But there have been times when there's been a vehicle right behind me I haven't heard mm-hmm. because of the music. So in that sense, they're probably a lot better off.
Some people's reasoning was, you know, they have banned the headphones, the ear sets for people driving a car because it's a distraction. Some people took that to the extent where they said, well, if you can't hear while you're driving, then deaf people shouldn't drive. But that doesn't seem very logical in my estimation, because a deaf person hears nothing and they're not really distracted by nothing. I mean, can you be distracted by nothing?
Yeah, but again, I think what Carol was pointing out is true, is that they compensate for not being able to hear, whereas a person that has these headphones on doesn't have that compensation.
You mentioned about their artwork, too. When you said that, it made me think of it as almost another sense. You know, I've heard not just deaf people, but people with sight problems and things like that compensate with their other senses. And in this case, artwork might be another sense of creativity or something.
I think because they're so visual too, but you know, and as I say, it's a form of communication. If the child has low language anyway, he's learned that one way he might be able to communicate with mom, dad, teacher, someone else is by drawing a picture. So he does it. That's right. The rest, other hearing kids don't need that. They can communicate by talking.
I did bring up here with me some videotapes, because I had known last year when we had Hearing Prairie Week that they did install a video system. Now we haven't approached Elmer or anybody on how it works, or if it's, you know, in working order right now. But these videotapes are all in sign language. I have some that are just signing scripture, and when I say that, they're signing, like, let's say Luke 1 through 3, you know, the first three chapters of Luke, but they're using American Sign Language. And this missions group who has done this, they're called Deaf Missions in Council Bluff, Iowa, they have gotten letters back from people saying, this is the first time I've understood the Bible, because it's been done in their language, a visual language. And this might be something that's interesting to you to see. You'd probably have to have somebody interpret exactly what they're saying so you'd understand that the voice of the scripture, there's a voice pattern in it too, a person speaking. It's not exactly what they're signing at the time that they're signing it. I also have a videotape of a missionary who has been in Korea for 18 years. She has established and has been working in a deaf orphanage over there. And she recently came to the States bringing three of the deaf children with her. And they did some songs in Korean Sign Language. The first verse was Korean, the second was American. So you can see the two different languages. She would have to sign to them or tell them when to slow up or speed up their signing because they couldn't hear the music. So when you have a choir director of the deaf, you need to direct them to keep up with the tempo of the music.
I saw a play once, made me think of it. Very, very interesting. They did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. The whole cast was deaf. So what they did was they had a table down in front, and they had Lucy's voice here, hearing person, and Schroeder, and, you know, Charlie Brown, and all of that. So the deaf actors and actresses were up above signing the song. They had someone down in the front signing to them so that they would stay with the beat. And then the voice, the hearing person would voice the song. The deaf person would mouth it. So you would think they were singing, and you could sit back and get caught up in it, and then you'd say, wait a minute, he's deaf. You know, sort of remind yourself. It's very, very interesting, and the skill level that it must have taken to coordinate their signing, their rhythm with the signs, watching the pace setters, they call them. And the whole thing was marvelous. It was really interesting.
I have seen Theater for the Deaf on two occasions, and I remember one especially where they demonstrated such a sense of humor about their own handicap. Mm-hmm. And I know that entire audience really enjoyed that, and I just thought that element or that dimension was so freeing, I think, was for me, and I don't, you know, I don't want to judge that.
But that's why the deaf tend to congregate together. You know, we've talked about that with Holden here, and the fact that we haven't had any great large numbers of deaf people coming. And, you know, why is that? They tend to have their own camps. They tend to have their own social meetings, their own groups, and so forth, because they can laugh together about it. They can communicate. They can be really free with each other. Whereas with us, we still, even Joe and I know sign language, we're still not a part of that community. Mm-hmm. Not that they don't like us and don't enjoy being with us, but it is different. Just talking with Mark and Becky out on our walk the other day, they were asking me how the kids, how was it coping with always having to ask what? Apparently Becky and Mark, you know, I'm sure go through that all the time. Those were the hearing impaired people who were here. What did you say, what? And I thought to myself, you know, I don't really know. My kids never really sat down and talked to me about those feelings that they have themselves. And it could very well be because I'm hearing. Whereas here's another deaf person who could probably share those feelings much better with them than what I ever could. And so that's why they tend to stay within their own community. It's not that they don't, you know, aren't friendly and aren't kind and considerate and wonderful people. They are. But, you know, they can talk with each other much easier than they can talk with us.
Would you go to Holden Village in Mexico with all Mexican-speaking people? I know that less in Spanish. And we provided an interpreter. We were talking about the mothering instinct. Where do we stop, you know, tagging along and saying, do you want to go here? Do you want to go there? Do you want, you know, where do you need an interpreter? It starts to feel like we're babying them, mm-hmm. trying to meet their needs. And I think that we need to find a better balance in what we can propose or suggest or offer as opposed to what we're forcing upon somebody else to supplement the things that we think they don't have because of their disability or handicap. I've also worked with deaf-blind people, which is a compounded handicap.
I had a patient in a nursing home for a short time. She was fairly young. She was afraid about the age of the human. She had been injured, and it was really frustrating trying to communicate. The only thing, she could write some things on the paper that she wanted, but she tended not to do that. She would scream. Mm-hmm. Instead, you know, she'd just get under the door and scream. Mm-hmm. And she'd been kind of spoiled, seeing mm-hmm. used to trying to get along with her. And the only way we could try to do things was to write out the letters and mm-hmm. Spell out something in the palm of her hand. Mm-hmm. Her hand. And she could do that. Then she'd try and write into our hand that way. And I had an awful time trying. I couldn't really follow that.
That's a good idea.
But we did have access then occasionally to an interpreter and come and do some sign language.
That sounds like the Helen Keller story.
Yeah, a lot of people under the assumption that my classroom is very quiet because my children are deaf. It's very much the other way around because they don't hear themselves and the noises that they make, and I sort of have to remind them occasionally. Class next door, you know, they can't bother them. But particularly young kids, 6-7 year olds, are very noisy and make lots of sounds and that sort of thing, and can't monitor their own voices.
I heard once where they were developing an auditorium theater type place with acoustical chairs so that people who were hearing impaired, like I've been told that if they put their hands down on a drum, mm-hmm. they could feel those mm-hmm. vibrations and they could in a sense hear that. Where in this auditorium, these chairs were being fitted so that the sound would be transformed into mm-hmm. vibrations. So that they could hear the music too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Deaf people dance. You know, I went to Gallaudet for 2 weeks, and they were having dances all the time. Of course, the music was, you know, not that they would necessarily hear it, although some of them had enough hearing would, but they could feel it through the floor and that sort of thing.
I've been to events where they handed out balloons to the deaf person. They all sat there with balloons, and the vibrations, you know, was just going through the balloons. And
Are there any cues that we should be aware of to pick up on someone that is hearing impaired?
I guess one of the obvious ones, I'm sure you thought of it, is the asking again, what did you say, that sort of thing. And then the withdrawing, you know, finding that person maybe communicating less, not understanding, you know, misconceptions, in other words.
Or covering it up with, you know, temper flare-ups because there was a misunderstanding. It was not only a misunderstanding, but it was based on the fact that they didn't get the correct information. And a lot of blaming goes on, but it's caused by a physical disability, which perhaps that person knows about and doesn't want to accept mm-hmm. or face. And then you go through almost the same stages of loss that you would experience through a death in the family or a divorce. You're experiencing hearing loss, and you have to face that with the same amount of, you know, sense of reality. That person is no longer going to be here. Well, I'm not going to have the same advantages that I had yesterday. And they may go through anger and depression and rejection and all these other stages that you would experience from other forms of losses. So you might notice that in their behavior.
One quick thing before we leave, something I wanted to mention and I forgot until now, but if you ever are in the situation and where you use an interpreter, please, when you talk to the hearing impaired person, talk to that person and not to the interpreter, because we see that all the time, and it's logical. I mean, I can understand why, because you're really talking to the interpreter in a way, and you say, tell this, you know, tell him that I really enjoyed whatever. Well, no, you need to turn to that person and say, I really enjoyed, you know, the artwork you did this afternoon, and then the interpreter will say that. But so often the deaf person then again is isolated because you're talking to the interpreter and not to him.